From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello and welcome back to the show. My name is Noel.
Our compatriot Matt is on adventures, but will be returning soon. They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Noel, it wasn't too long ago that the U.S. government released sort of a report on what they call UAPs now.
And it was with a little bit of a whimper, you know? It wasn't maybe what we all had hoped it would be, but it was something. It was some low-key acknowledgement that there's something weird going on.
Right. And this was widely anticipated by a lot of experts in the field of studying what may be extraterrestrials, what are called UFOs, what the government calls UAPs. And as we explored this on our show, we began looking for more subject matter experts. And that is why today we are incredibly fortunate to be joined with the one and only Roderick Martin, the creator of Extraterrestrial Evidence, which is by far the best UFO show on Clubhouse. Roderick, thank you so much for coming today.
Hey, glad to be here.
So could you tell us just a little bit about the origin of extraterrestrial evidence? Was there something in your life that that you personally encountered or something that inspired you to bring this conversation more to the forefront for people?
What? That's a great question. And in fact, I get that question all the time. But I will say I got two sides to that. So real quickly, the first side is I'm a UFO investigator. Okay, it made sense to talk about it. And the other part of that, you know, I was married, right? And I was in a house. I couldn't even talk about UFOs 2 years ago. You know, I just could not in the house. Okay. So when Clubhouse came, I was like, you know what? This is the perfect place. I can maybe get 20 people in a room to talk about some UFOs, you know, just to, you know, talk, you know. And now today is 21,000. Got one of the largest growing rooms there or clubs there. And the rest is just history.
You say you couldn't talk about it in the house. I mean, is that because your partner, I mean, there was a stigma around it? I think this is an interesting kind of microcosm of the larger stigma behind talking about these kinds of things, whether that's something that's been imposed over the years by the government itself to kind of delegitimize these kinds of conversations. And certain people, it's just kind of taboo. But why didn't you feel comfortable talking about it? Or was it just something that she wasn't into?
Well, for starters, it definitely wasn't government intervention. It was, you know, taboo. You know, I'm in a community that it is taboo. You know, when I saw a UFO when I was young, and I couldn't talk about that. I couldn't tell the, you know, in my neighborhood where I grew up, you saw a UFO, you could be the neighborhood bully. And you walk out there and tell somebody you saw a UFO, street cred gone, right?
It's on. Ouch, yeah.
But in the house, and I think it goes a little back basic with my ex-wife, religious background. So that's another connection when it gets down to my community when you want to talk about extraterrestrials, and then you mix that up with the Bible, taboo subject, period. And so it was just one of those things. But it didn't keep me from researching at night when she would go to sleep, or just doing my work, or, you know, when I became an investigator and all those things. So, but it definitely was not part of our conversation, even just driving down the street and say, hey, you know, what about that UFO last night I saw on TV? That wasn't happening.
So this is fascinating because, this probably is a similar situation or some version of a situation that a lot of people listening to the show today have encountered. I want to talk a little bit about your work as a UFO investigator, because unlike, and this is not a ding on other shows or other people who consider themselves ufologists, but unlike a lot of those folks, you are actually an active member of MUFON, which is the largest UFO investigative body, non-governmental investigative body in the U.S., if not the world. Could you tell us a little bit about just MUFON for anyone who isn't aware of it and how you have interacted with or led the organization at times.
And as you mentioned, you know, being that MUFON is one of the largest organizations out there. And for the novice or people who are enthusiasts, want to get more information about UFOs, they actually have a website, MUFON.com, and then a membership where an ordinary person can go and get a membership and get some behind the scenes files. But if you want to go deeper, you know, get deeper into this thing, you then can go to their website, become a member, and then go through the MUFON University, then go through the field training certification program, which is extensive. It really is. And once you go through those things, you now become a field investigator where you not only have access like to the back end of the files, which is cool, because you get to see all the other cases everywhere. But then you begin to get a mentor. They assign you cases, and they just kind of hold your hand every step of the way. And then once you get down pack of writing the reports, investigating the reports, going through thoroughly with the witnesses, and then they turn you loose. And then at that point, you are an investigator. And it's still one of those things that, you know, you tell some people, hey, I'm a UFO investigator, and they get the Scooby-Doo like, oh. You know, so, and it's just one of those things. So,
well, you mentioned the idea of your ex-wife's Christian faith potentially causing problems for her to be able to wrap her head around these conversations. But unless I'm mistaken, I believe you have stated that you continue to be a religious person. You continue to believe in God and in Christianity. Is that accurate?
That's very accurate.
And so how do you reconcile those things? Like, I mean, you mentioned that that's a big barrier to entry for a lot of folks that truly believe in the Bible, and maybe whether it's like strict belief that the way it's written is exactly the way it occurred. Obviously, there's ways to look at it that are more, you know, conceptual or maybe parables or, you know, kind of almost like metaphors to apply to your life. But some people, this really could be, you know, it's the same with evolution. Some people count evolution out entirely because it's not in the Bible. How do you reconcile your belief, and I would consider you to be a true believer in extraterrestrials, with your true belief in God and in the Bible?
Well, and I think you probably have made one of the most astounding connections when it comes down to this. And what I think about all of it, Noel, is when you first of all, you're going to believe in something. OK, so I have not been to a point where I've said, OK, I've been over the mountaintop. Now my whole Christian background is just thrown out the window. OK, however, you know, once you're curious enough, like I am and was, you begin to check deeper into some of the stories. It's no longer culture biases where you grow up, this is the stigma, this is the way Jesus looked. You know, goes back when people say they see clouds, all of a sudden it's Jesus, right? And I get that a lot in my clubs when I'm speaking to people, because you can literally know almost where they're from based on some of the way they talk and how they describe certain things. Sure. And so when it gets down to this extraterrestrial side, and even now when you do, and this might be hardcore for the audience, you know, you can go to the book of Genesis, verse 1, chapter 26. The verse says, let's make man in our image, not my, our, as in plural, you know, and that starts the process of like, oh, wait a minute, we mean our, who is that? You know, is God plural? You know, is this is, but it's in the book, you know. And so when you start running through scriptures, and there's a lot of them in there that kind of gets you wondering about the story itself that's in the Bible, then you begin to explore deeper and deeper. And since I've already had an interest in UFOs, it wasn't hard for me to consume, and without you know, going, wow, this is going to break my whole faith, you know, down, to going to the possibility that there's more out there, and the possibility that God could have created, as it said, the universe and those extraterrestrials too, possibility.
Well, I've always thought it was a little bit self-involved and a little bit kind of conceited, the idea that we think we are the only ones that God created in his image. You know, I mean, to me, I'm not a Christian. I'm, I guess, what you call agnostic. I find the again, with no disrespect, the mythology of Christianity to be fascinating, as I do that of many other religions. And there's a lot of interesting correlations between them. But I've always thought it was a little short-sighted for true believers to think, really? It's only us? We're the only ones?
I think that's a pretty common belief, or increase a belief on the increase. you know, in one of your most recent episodes of the podcast, Roderick, you explore this very subject. And it was one of the things that I was very interested in checking out, because with the idea of a literalist interpretation of any book of faith, what we see is that people people sometimes pick and choose what they tend to or what they want to take literally. So if there is a description of something that might seem inexplicable or strange to maybe Christians who consider themselves more skeptical, right? The story of the Nephilim is something that can be confusing to a lot of those folks. And I love that you point out the cultural lens, because when we look at things, we are really looking at almost any fact or account, we're looking at it through the framework of every moment of our lives and our culture leading up to us encountering that. So I have to ask, you know, don't you agree that the math is on the side of life existing, at least somewhere else in the universe? Like, to your point, Noel, it's funny to me that the math does back up this idea, right? The universe is so large, even just the part we can observe, that it's statistically certain that some kind of other life, intelligent life, did exist, will exist, or does exist today. Do you run into a lot of skepticism on the show, Roderick? Or how do you address people who come to you with very skeptical ideas, who say, like, this is no such thing?
Well, that question, do I run into a lot of skepticism? Yeah. That's like, is it hot here in Texas? Yeah. Yeah. And it's hot. All right. It is a hot topic. Yeah. So, but you got to remember, when we're dealing with skepticism, oftentimes it's going to fall under what we would consider literary laziness, okay? Because what happens is most people are not curious, right? So, for example, you know, and I'm real cautious about this, and I wasn't in the beginning, but now I am. When somebody comes up on a show and they'll just start trying to state some information. And oftentimes, if you're in a lot of rooms, they'll just be like, oh, yeah. And some people will follow that person, go, oh, he's smart because he found something on the internet. Me, I'm a little more curious. I'm going to ask the questions. Where did you find that? Where did that come from? And whatever. And sometimes it pisses some of them off, you know, to where they think you're coming at them, but not. But the worst case scenario is two types of people. When I say that, and you run into this skepticism where you could get the person who you will come up or you can tell something to, and they won't ask anything. They'll just say, oh, okay, I believe you. And then you get the person who said, man, get away from me with that UFO crap. And those two people are identical. It's just that neither one will want to go further to ask the questions. Well, what makes you think UFOs are real? What data or what information? And then I can start providing instances. Hey, this is why. And then I can say, go to the government. They just said it. They did a press conference. Oh, by the way, you pay taxes, right? Yeah, well, $22 million for your tax. You go to work every day. You in on this deal. And that's the one to get them. Because when I tell them, look at that, you know, them deductions, in there is the UFO program hidden, and we appreciate your money for the cause, you know, and so they don't like that one. But that's really what happens. So, I get a lot of skepticism, even right to this day, even though now it's in mainstream media, and most people still deny the fact. And real quickly, I'll get to this. I usually say, I tell you what, UFO is anything that's unidentified flying object. Do you all agree that there is something up there we don't know what it is? Yeah. Okay. So now we'll go to the deepness of extraterrestrial. But at least let's all figure out that everybody is saying there's something flying around. We don't know what it is. And it's called a UFO.
Yeah, I kind of apply that same thinking to the existence of God in some ways. And I've said this on the show before. I think I said I was an atheist or an agnostic. I think agnostic is the one where I'm like, there's something, But I don't know. I don't know that it's knowable in my personal lifetime or in my personal experience. That doesn't mean I'm going to stop questioning it or be interested or be uninterested in or just make it go away. Like in my mind, I mean, it's something I talk to friends and colleagues about constantly and on this show. And I feel the same way about UFOs and UAPs. Like, I don't know that it's knowable for me yet in this lifetime, whether what they are or what exactly led to them existing. But I'm not going to say they don't exist. And I certainly think there's interesting evidence out there to the idea that they definitely do exist. So to me, when you shut down people's ideas or shut down people's beliefs, you're shutting down conversation that could be educational to both sides and could be not only educational, but like enriching as a human being, as someone living in the world. Like, I think these are experiences and things that we should all give some credence to, even if it's only in like a thought experiment type way. And I think that's a big part of some of the conversations we have on this show. So I appreciate your perspective on that very much.
Well, and Noah, I think it's one more step that most people don't want to touch. This is our children. See, right before our eyes, the landscape is changing, and there's going to be parents who's going to shut their children out of the future of what's happening. For example, what I mean is that go to Morgan Stanley's website, right? Right there, they're telegraphing that the new space economy is going to be worth trillions of dollars, telling people to invest in it. And then here's the 10 most fields that, you know, that's going to be the future of the economy. Now, that means jobs, education, all of these things. It's the future. They're telling this. Then you got Jeff Bezos, who says, and you got to believe him now, right? So what he says, we're going to move industry off this earth. And when he says it, it's like E.F. Hutton back in the day. Okay, Jeff, we're going to move. And so you got all of this is going on. Okay, so forget about the side of, you know, UFOs and all of that. Let's just go with the possibility. So we got to at least start that conversation with our children that there may be something else out there. Look to the stars. We're not talking about, they no longer have to be astronauts. They're just going to get on something. We saw them go to space in 16 minutes. To go to work.
Right, right. It'll be the commute.
It's going to be a commute. But imagine all of those parents today who are saying, mm-hmm. no, 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 no. And then the kids are growing up, no. And then all of a sudden they're mentally shocked when it's now profound. It's not only there's something out there, but this is where your job is going to be. And here's the future. And so imagine that generation.
You know, I think that's a prescient point. We, in an earlier episode of this show, we stumbled across we recorded right after multiple billionaires had announced their space race. And we were thinking, there's a bigger contextual sign here, isn't it? Like some of the world's most powerful people at the same time, roughly, just said, you know, let's start getting deeper into space, and the money follows. And I think it's really impactful, the way that you're framing this, to speak to people, even, you know, whether they are hardcore dyed-in-the-wool true believers or whether they consider themselves hardcore skeptics. I think speaking to people in real-time, day-to-day terms of money and money's impact really drives home. This is a serious thing. Like I'm going to be honest, we were off air crowing a little bit when that UAP report came out. It wasn't to the extent of Project Blue Book, and it wasn't, I would say, the real report, which remains classified and was just for Congress, apparently, but it gave so much validation to a lot of those conversations.
Two key points in there too. I'll share that with you in a moment. Go ahead.
Oh, no, yeah, I'd like to talk about this, yeah, because one of the key points we saw was several million dollars later, the experts in aviation and aeronautics were saying, we don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know.
At the very least, it was an acknowledgement that there's something and we don't know.
So what do you see as the key points? Yeah.
Well, you said it already. Follow the money.
Oh.
Okay. And so, but in a more deeper sense to that, we can go and look at what most people are not seeing. Trump activated a new military force. We have a new military called the
Space Force.
Space Force, and nicknamed the Guardians. Okay. Now, that means there's going to be a lot of people's children that I get back to in the future is going to be part of that future, right? But no, no, don't tell them about UFOs. Don't tell them about that. But they're going to be the guardians of the future. So, but in that report, as we go through all of the instances that they were saying, we don't know what this is. Okay, it's a possibility of that. They did everything except for say extraterrestrials exist. We just want to make sure. But at the very last line is we need more money. So it's and why would Morgan Stanley, talk about new space economy and now the government is put more money into it. So, all right. So that's one side of the fence, though, although there has been other instances that are showing that there's a reason we're moving in this direction. And we can probably cover that later. You said earlier about the hostility or different things that the threat right. or non-threat. And we definitely need to get into that. But I think for the most part, like you said, the money, number one. And number two is preparing the public real slowly that there's something's going to be happening. Because in my world, there's always been this rumor that the extraterrestrial is saying that it's time that, we should now reveal themselves. And it's just kind of a story, backstory. In fact, the Israeli prime minister, I don't know if you remember, he did an interview and he said that. He mentioned the same exact thing. So all of these things are happening and nobody knows what's really going on there. But at the end of the day, that report should have been like marching news for the world, but it wasn't. It's just like, all right, 9 pages. Okay, so those of us in ufology, okay, were we disappointed? I wasn't. Now, did I expect for them to come out and say some things? No, but it did give validation for all the people who thought, everybody who talked about this subject was cuckoo, crazy, and all this. Now it's there. It's a serious thing. It's mandated. We got to go look into this phenomenal, right? So, but then they revealed they already been doing this. So it's just one of these things I tell people that, we are at a time that, and it's probably the best time, especially for me to be in it. It's a new beginning. It's the beginning. But all these people who've been around ufology for 60 years, who got burnt out, who got slapped around, told they was crazy, don't do this. I mean, my license plate on my car says ufology.
It's interesting because, you mentioned validation. I think that's super important. But now you have folks like Luis Elizondo, who is this, massive figure in the UFO community. And that's largely because he's in many, many ways.
He's not bigger than me. Physically.
I mean, he looms large in the zeitgeist of UFO discussion. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he has government background and he really has. I can't really see an agenda or an axe to grind necessarily. I feel like he is putting himself at risk by saying a lot of the things that he's saying. We know that the government absolutely does have many, many axes to grind. And they do not care for their own that then come and speak out against them after the fact, or at least contradict their official narrative. You've mentioned that you've expressed confidence in his perspectives on the existence of extraterrestrials. What is it about him that appeals to you or that you appreciate? And do you see him as that kind of like key figure that lends a little more credence to this kind of conversation?
Well, the fact that he was there, he's the inside, player back in the day on this matter is one thing. Number two is the realism approach, because see, when I do my clubs with extraterrestrial evidence and Clubhouse, you'll get all these different perspectives, not just from the skeptics, but you're going to get what I call the factions that see the extraterrestrial as benevolent, right? This is they come in peace and all of that. And then when you got Lou Elizondo out there and he's saying from a strategic point, guys, we don't know what this is. It could be a threat. And it brings this clashing into both sides. And what I like about that with him is because just like all of us, I tell people all the time, why the hell you got car insurance? Just in case you have a wreck. So I want to be ready just in case they do something. I don't want to be caught off guard like the movies, and being that one person have to go look for that guy to change the whole thing because he come up with some, biological thing. No, we need to be ready.
The Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, kind of. you know what I'm saying? So when Lou Elizondo talks about the seriousness, and when we see videos, he talks about those five absorbables, right? Mm-hmm. And one in particular is that transmedium travel where they can go from the sky into the air, down into the water. We have nothing. that could do that. And for somebody to think if you can see something doing that and they happen to tie a missile or something on that and it can do that, our ace is in trouble, right? And so yeah. if they decide to want to engage, okay? So, but I don't want to be sitting here saying, oh, they ain't done nothing now. Well, maybe they just ain't pissed off yet. Who knows? But right. the fact of the matter is the capabilities that they do. So I don't want no guy driving by my neighborhood pointing his gun. Now, he ain't shot yet, but he just keep doing a drive-by. You mm-hmm. know, yeah, you think I ain't going to go get mine? And be waiting just in case and tell the kids, hey, y'all stay in the back. I don't care if it's 10 years. Just don't come out front. He keeps coming by here every day. Yeah, mm-hmm. you want to be ready. So Lou prepares us for the inevitable, where the rest of the world is preparing us for the benevolent side of they come in peace. And they ain't done either one. So which mm-hmm. one side you want to be on when it happens? So
I mean, they're doing a recon at this point. You know, I mean, yeah.
I think that's really well put, because it is – you know, going back to the situation you described in childhood where you said, I saw something that I could not explain in the sky, but where I grew up, no one would talk about that, right? You would be a laughingstock. People would drag you for saying that. I think that is something that Elizondo and the people he talked to, and probably many of the people you've spoken with, ran into as well. You know, the trained Air Force pilots were at times a little bit gun shy because they thought they would lose their own credibility if they were like, hey, I know I went through, you know, decades of training and it cost millions of dollars to get me to say this. But guys, I don't know what that was. That was crazy. Things shouldn't be able to fly in and out of water.
But they had something worse up against them than I would, man, because, you know, me, I'm just an investigator. If I talk or whatever, you know, either they're going to laugh at me. But when you're talking about Lou Elizondo, who has a national security clearance, with the threat of losing his pension, thrown in jail, all of those pilots who got national security clearances, pensions on the line, and all of these different things, they have a whole bigger weight on top of them to keep them quiet than I do. Right. And so although they seeing these things now, this is the whole point that you just made, that which, you know, gets me like, what, you know, when we got one of these pilots out here, you know, we all think of the movie Top Gun, Tom Cruise, right?
Yeah.
You know, what's the guy's name? It was Goose. And
Iceman.
These are the best of the best of the best, right? They sharp. And you telling me we got some of those guys up there seeing things, and then you come back and say, oh, they don't know what they're talking about. Or it's equipment malfunction. Really? Are you kidding me? Are we supposed to believe that? I just watched Top Gun. Them dudes ain't making those mistakes. And if they do, they die, right? And so you telling me that he doesn't know what he saw, or it was an equipment malfunction. No. But they can't do it. I get it, because there's trouble. But it is changing and it's shifting a little bit, because some of them have nothing to lose. More people are coming forward. You got celebrities talking now. And now it's in mainstream media. We in for a clash of the titans. And we're in the right place at the right time, plain and simple.
Okay. We're going to take a quick pause for a word from our sponsor. And then we're back with more from Roderick.
And we've returned with Roderick Martin.
If you don't mind, Ben, I thought we might touch a little bit on the benevolent versus antagonistic model, you know, of extraterrestrials. We talked about briefly the idea of extraterrestrials meddling with our nuclear infrastructure. Specifically, there have been sightings for many, many years, I believe since the 40s, of extraterrestrials, or UFOs rather, UAPs, over nuclear facilities like Savannah River sites and others, Livermore, Sandia, Los Alamos, etc. And the idea that they have disabled nukes just before testing. You're going to be better at this than me, Roderick. But to me, that speaks to a benevolent model, even if there's a weird power flex involved, where it's like, hey, look what we can do, but also we're kind of trying to save you from yourselves. I like that model. I think it's interesting, but I also it's a little hard for me to swallow in general. But if I was going to choose one, that would obviously be the one I would choose. Tell us your perspective on that, you know, with that evidence and the work of George Knapp, the investigative journalist who's studied these things and these sightings for many decades. And he actually filed a bunch of Freedom of Information Act requests. So he's a journalist. He's like a real deal journalist. He was going through the right channels and, you know, telling the story. And same with Lou Elizondo. He's a guy who's got a lot to lose by, he talks about this as well. This is something that he speaks of as well. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts of this benevolent versus antagonistic view of extraterrestrials as pertains to these kind of historical sightings with nukes.
Well, I got a question for you, Noel, and then we'll get into that. Or I got an example. So let's say at your home, you got an alarm system, correct? Ooh. But you see a shadow figure standing out there and he cuts it off. And then you cut it back on. He cuts it off. Is that benevolent to you? You know what I mean? You know, he could cut your alarm system off. He ain't done nothing. And you like, what the hell? You cut it back on and he cuts it off and just go. And then he walks off into the dark and he comes back again in the middle of the night. Cut your alarm system off.
He's letting me know what he's capable of, and he's trying to scare me.
But that's not. But that's not benevolence, right?
No, it's if, not. No,
that was the point I was making. So if they're cutting our stuff off, I ain't looking at that as benevolent, right? Now, don't get me wrong. I share two sides of it. So you know, I don't think that if there is a species or multiple species of extraterrestrials, that they all are bad, right? Just like humans, okay? So, but there could be some out there who just don't like us, who's preparing or not. So I leave that open on, you know, for the scale to weigh in on, right? But when it comes down to what you asked between the two, I think there is a huge line in between the middle because you're going to have the factions that are being contacted consciously, right? Or they've been abducted and returned, but then some of the abductees are going to tell you, no, they probed me, they stuck me, they all these things, and maybe they testing for something. So I think it's going to take where both sides got to come together with the realism of what's happening and to take in account that, all right, there's two sides, but let's try to at least merge that we know something is out. We just don't know what's happening. And you have to be a fan of both. But then there's cases that most people are just not. So hopefully I answered that. But if you need to go deeper.
Oh, this is great. And we are going to go deeper. I want to set up some context for fellow conspiracy realists listening today. When we talk about the relationship or the density of sightings around nuclear weaponry storage sites. One of the best things for our audience to check out would be the story from, I believe, the press conference in 2010. It was in Washington, D.C. It was a National Press Club briefing, and multiple Air Force personnel came forward and said, yes, there is something with the ability to neutralize not only U.S., but Russian nuclear missile sites. So this is not an internet rumor, to be very clear. There are experts who have talked about this. I think we need to make sure everybody understands that. The next thing is, oh, man, I would love to just talk for hours with you guys about the problem of discerning motivation. We have a difficult time as a species discerning the motivation of our fellow humans. And so when we talk in terms of benevolence or malevolence, we're maybe going back to the idea of cultural framework, looking through a human lens at maybe a not human thing. So the idea of benevolence on, you know, if there is someone coming from somewhere else, whether that's somewhere else in physical space, whether it's another dimension, which some people think, or some people also speculate about, then their idea of benevolence may not be our idea of benevolence, you know. And when we look at, you know, the scary thing about realism is that you have to look at all possibilities, right? And we have to base, one thing I really appreciate about your research and the way you interact with people on extraterrestrial evidence is that you do come with the facts and you do base these ideas in a very grounded, realistic way. So that means we have to talk about things like dark forest theory, which is the idea that given all the unknown variables intelligent civilizations deal with when they see another intelligent civilization, their first move, what they see as self-preservation, may be an aggressive or hostile move. You know, the short story, the sci-fi short stories are full of this, where it's someone like, finally, you know, SETI gets a message back from another civilization, and all it says is, shh, they'll hear you. I think that's a little alarmist, but I'm really interested in your opinion of this. You know, what, like, when we're looking at this from a realistic way, in from your perspective, is there a way to begin to ascribe motive to these sightings? And if so, how do you begin to unpack that?
Well, simply, or should I say, with this particular story or an event, I would say, you know, when you hear in my space that, you know, that the extraterrestrials are somehow saying, you know, we need to have more love and that the human, we're destroying the planet and they're here to stop us from or to get us to realize those scenarios. So I take you into this particular scenario. So let's say, Ben, you married? Yes, no, I don't want to put you out here.
I am not.
All right, let's just say girlfriend, you know, y'all sitting on a porch because I don't want to use Noel again. I want to keep picking on her.
You know, thanks, man. I'm loving the crowd work.
You know, and you're sitting on your front porch like we all do if we have the front porch. And you got a yard. And you got you know, big, beautiful yard. And over there you see a couple of ant piles, which is the representation of us on Earth. Mm-hmm. And the ants blow some shit up over there. Excuse me. Am I over okay to use that language?
You're absolutely fine.
Yeah, it's gonna be awesome. Beep. Yeah.
And they blow some shit up over there, and you standing there and going, honey, what's going on? This is the extraterrestrial seeing us firing off nuclear weapons, right? Mm. Let's go find out what these damn ants are up to. Right? And now, because they can see this blast all over the universe. It's messing up wormholes. It's doing all kind of stuff. And they're going, these guys done got a hold to some matches. What the hell? You know, and you go over there. Now, you fly over them. And you making a determination because either you're saying they're either going to mess up the yard, which is Earth, and we either got to do something about it. And because you do have the power to go over to Home Depot or Lowe's and get some stuff to sprinkle on and kill the whole mound if you wanted to, right? You know, and you were like, well, all right, we'll just let's give them a warning. You know, let's cut this thing off. Let's throw some water on the matches or something where these ants that don't do what they're doing. And this is my analogy of what they do is to give us a warning of, hey, listen, you guys are messing with some crazy stuff here, you know, and don't try. Because there's been instances where we've tested rockets, like you said, and they have footage where these something comes out of nowhere and shoots a beam and disarms it. Why would they do that? Is to say, because we can and don't do this, you know? And so although our technological advances are moving rapidly and we're creating all these things, who knows that we're not going to find that one thing. And it goes back to the movies. Y'all remember Stargate? Remember the movie?
Yeah.
Remember that one part, and not the whole series, but the movie that they made the series from, when Raw said to the guy, he brought back the nuclear weapon because they was going to blow him up. He says, you guys in advance since I left y'all there. Y'all, you remember, he says, you guys figure out a way to harness the power of the atom. And he goes, I'm going to send this back to stop this mess. You get what I'm saying? And that was his point. I didn't think you guys was going to do that now when I left. You know, that's a problem. So I don't know when it comes down to that part. That's just the humor or the speculation. But it is a possibility because I would do that to the ants in my front yard if I saw them over there blowing up some stuff and I'm on my porch. I'm going to go. My curious self going to go over there. And if it's getting too far out of hand, I'm going to put a stop to that whole mound. And you better believe it.
And in this analogy, it would be incredibly unlikely for us to think in terms of the individual ant in the anthill. Instead, I think we're prioritizing what we see as the greater good of the yard or the universe, right?
Yeah.
Let's pause for a moment for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll return with Roderick Martin. ¶¶
we are back.
This is leading us in so many directions because, you know, Noel, you can attest to this as well. We have, over the years, we've received a lot of correspondence from people who claim they have had an experience or a sighting, or they feel that these are misunderstood, you know, and they'll say a lot of that stuff that was seen flying around, you know, in some of the heydays of UFO reporting on the government side, like the 40s, 50s, they'll say, well, you know, a lot of that stuff was actually secret earthly vehicles, right? Like stealth bombers, things like that. Do you think, and later in some cases, that did turn out to be the case. There were people who saw a plane that didn't officially exist, but was there. And to your earlier point, Roderick, we paid for it. So I wanted to know, does that still happen? Or do you think it's possible that people could be misidentifying like secret craft from Lockheed Martin or something like that?
Just to add on the back end of that, Ben, I mean, it does feel like there is indication in that disclosure document. That's certainly a category in that disclosure document of like tech that exists but isn't officially acknowledged yet. I mean, they don't go so far as to say that exactly, but I feel like they're pointing to that as being one possibility. But yes, interested, please, what do you think about that? The idea of this craft that can go from sky to ground to water, like, is that something that maybe exists they're working on? We just don't know about it yet. They're not ready to acknowledge it, or maybe it's the kind of thing they don't want the public to know about.
Well, I mean, there's you guys make some great points, and so we can kind of break it into several boxes here. One in particular would be there is technology. There are secret planes and things that we have that is either reverse technology from some of the fallen or crashed crafts. And then, you know, there's been also saying that some of the beings themselves are helping governments with technology as well. So all of these things are out there. Okay. But when it comes down to, you know, some of the other stuff that you know, like you see with these governments and the different companies, you know, one of the surprising part for them to do this is to move a lot of that technology to the private sector anyway. Why? Because there's no FOIA acts for the private company. We can't request information. Mm-hmm. So they can hide it. All they do is fund it and still, you know, and still stay on top of it. So you're seeing a lot of that. That's what's going on.
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons that's happening. So when you look back at the separation of that, yeah, we got technology and we have things for there. Now, to offset the public perception, why not let one of these things zip across so that we can confuse the fact that there's UFOs when it was a secret spy plane, so that our adversaries and everything else, you know, it just don't get out there. But let's go with what you said last is you got something that's coming out of water, sea, air, and space. If that was one of our adversaries, game over. And you think one of them would have been hiding it for 60 years of technology and not trying to and letting the United States be the governing body of the most of the world right now. And we have the most feared military might in this planet. And we're going to reign supreme. And when they got something that can just wipe and we can't even catch it, file it, do nothing with it. They're not holding on that just because, oh, we just don't want nobody to know. You know, nah. So I think at the end of the day, we're dealing with something that we don't know where it is. And when it goes deeper, it has all to do with water, right? And because, you know, we know that the Earth is 73% water and man has only explored 3% of that. We have nothing to go to the bottom of the ocean, period. So if they were there and that's the place to hide, which 90% of all I know, our UFO sightings come out of water. And so with that being said, all of that connects to we're dealing with something that has better technology and could possibly been here all this time. So this thing can go a lot of places. But what we do know is it ain't ours. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then I really appreciate touching on the point about water. It's something that we've explored on the show, Noel, Matt, and I, gosh, years back, we were reading the reports, and you know, these things came out as like studies in universities or trade journals, and half of them were written by very, very concerned professors and researchers, and the other half were written by private sector researchers, you know, the Morgan Stanleys, who are like, let's buy up all the fresh water. When we look at the world today, anybody listening to this show or listening to Extraterrestrial Evidence looks at the world today, it's not a stretch to say that things overall are becoming increasingly unsustainable in some ways. Like, we are seeing parts of the world become more and more difficult to inhabit, you know? Like the, like where you said, is it hot in Texas? It's sure getting hotter in the Middle East. Do you see any connection with what people would say is growing instability just in the Earth's systems, like the weather system and so on?
You mean like global warming or?
Yeah. Well, call it what you will. You know, like the fact that the climate has become more inhospitable for people in different regions of the world. Do you see any connection with that, between that and the more mainstreaming of the conversation about UFOs? I just wonder, because it seems like they kind of rose in step recently.
Well, they have risen in step, like you said, but right in plain sight, Jeff Bezos said we need to take industries off of Earth to save Earth, because there's a lot of things that we're using and doing is polluting the atmosphere, whether it's causing global change, atmospheric change. But he has a mission to say, okay, let's move some of these highly crazy things that is happening, or we're manufacturing certain things, we need to take them off the planet. So that mandated mission is already in place. It's going one way or the other, and we're not going to stop that. So that could validate what you're saying, that there is connectivity. Now, as far as is the extraterrestrials, like one of the movies, I think, where they was heating up the planet real slow, you know, who played in that? Golly, I forget the guy. But it was an alien movie where they was in Mexico desert. And anyway, it'll probably come to me a little later. But anyway, there was a movie where they was real just putting this greenhouse effect real slowly into our atmosphere. And it was trying to take a couple hundred years, but to heat up the planet so that the reptilian style extraterrestrials had
enough. Talking about V? Was it V?
It wasn't V. It was the guy. Okay. His brother, Emilio Estevez's brother, Charlie Sheen, played in the movie. Yeah. And remember, and they had this little ball that would drop on the floor and it eats up everything. And then at the end, the little kid legs bent backwards and he ran off, you know. He was like, I'm going to tell everyone. I'm going to let everybody know. Yeah.
Was it The Arrival?
The Arrival. Yep. That's what it was.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, so a lot of these things, again, is tied to movies, I say, too. So, you know, we get a little, you know, tip of what's happening out there. But I can't say for sure that it has anything to do with the UFO, UAP phenomenon with the global changes. But it could be possibly where our Earth atmosphere is changing, where the extraterrestrials think we are destroying the planet once again, and that there's some intervention needs to happen. But definitely, if you go back to the industry side, Jeff Bezos just did a press conference and he said, we got to save the planet and we need to move some of these things off the planet.
Oh, that was nice of him.
Yeah, right.
Glad he's doing something positive with his stimulus check, finally.
Well, you know, he and that's what most people didn't know. I tell people all the time, I said, you remember your $600 stimulus check you got back in December or January? Yeah. Well, in that thing was a COVID package. What the government had to have release in 90 days or 180 days about the UFOs. And like, what? I said, yeah, it was right there in the $600 check. You know. So it's like they blind us one way with one thing and then roll out something else. But again, I said again to your audience, people that's watching, you know, and listening to your podcast, your YouTube channel, nothing timing wise is greater than where we are now, because there's things that's unfolding and it's just the beginning. They was hiding it back in the 60s and 40s. And even then it's changed now. And I think you said something early I was going to kind of bring into the conversation. you know, the Brookings Report. If anybody know about that, you know, they can Google it. This is a report that was commissioned by NASA back in the 40s, I think, where they wanted the Brookings Institute to do a report on how would the public receive or tend to UFO phenomenon if they were to reveal it. And they came back and said, oh, hell no, don't tell them nothing. They can't handle it. Right. And it goes back to the Will Smith movie. Remember, and I'm a movie buff, but remember Men in Black when he sat out there on the bed?
Oh, sorry. No, the other Will Smith movie. Yeah, Men in Black.
Well, him and Tommy Lee, when he first find the first one, when he found out about there was aliens, mm-hmm. and Will Smith says, you know, he says, man, why we won't tell them? People are smart. And Tommy Lee looks at him and says, yeah, a person is, but people are dumb and stupid. We can't tell them. So the Brookings Report said that back then, but the only thing that they did say that was shocking was the worst hit community, if this was revealed, the worst hit community mentally was going to be the scientific community. And I didn't really realize what they said, why they mentioned that back when I read it a year or so ago, but now I get it today, is because I know now the scientific community doesn't work like what we do, just finding research. They're not going to go off what we call a hypothesis versus a theory, right? This is just a hypothesis, what we're talking about. But they got to have theoretical, this is happening, that UFOs coming at the same time every day. Now we can predict the fact that that's real, that this is going to happen. And because these anomalies don't happen that way, and they haven't yet to get one to analyze it, they're not with the program of seeing UFOs exist, but they're coming along slowly. But I get it and I understand that.
That's something that's so strange about that report, because another piece of what they say, or what Brookings says in that report, is that they basically say, correct me if I'm getting this wrong, Roderick, but I think they basically say, if you are a scientist or an engineer or physicist or whatever, and you know that all of a sudden there's this technology that may be literally light years beyond our own, what do you do if you run into some hard limit? Like, this is technology that humans haven't made because the human brain just isn't the right hardware for it. That's got to be kind of a kick in the pants, right? That's no moment.
It's like that movie, and again, I'm just a movie buff. When the world was going to end and they went to go the core where they were drilling down, and he said, and the guy says, well, what you call this? Adaptanium, whatever. Why? I don't know. It's just something new. You know, and that's what the scientists probably would do. It's like, we don't know what periodic table. What is that? You know, but we have a lot of intelligent scientists, so it wouldn't take them long to figure it out. They just need to be able to test it. And that's what the government is not doing. In most cases, is giving that stuff out so our scientists could catch us up. And that's another part with this military thing, and where people don't really understand the whole purpose of this 180-day thing. It wasn't just to tell us. It was time for our government to say, it's time for you guys to just put everything in one place, because we have all these different branches of military that has their own files on UFOs, but nobody's telling each other. You know, and
well, even with our own government, I mean, you talk about Space Force. You talk about Space Force. There was that show, Space Force, with Steve Carell, that kind of satirized the idea of this, you know, new branch of the military. But it does really effectively, and what I would consider like something along the lines of like Dr. Strangelove, it shows how little cooperation there is between the scientists that the government hires and the government officials that oversee them and that are their handlers. They don't want them to work outside of their like pay grade. They don't want them to discover things. They want to keep them within a very specific range of activities. And the moment that starts to, you know, quote unquote, threaten the mission, or there's information that the scientists are like, it's my duty as a member of the scientific community to let people know, that's when they start cutting funding and dismantling their work groups and all of that stuff. So there really is this clash always between the scientific community and the government, even when they're working supposedly together.
Oh, my God, yeah. And don't even talk about free energy and all these rumors of where technology is going and that beast of a conversation. But, yeah, you know, and again, our militaries are not, well, they're supposed to now, but they have not been working together. And You got the Navy who had their files. You got the Air Force who has their files, CIA, FBI, the Army, and the list goes on and on. And it could be the same UFO that popped up out of the ocean, then our Navy saw it, right? And they got their reports. And then that same thing is flying up in the sky, so Navy does have airplanes, but then because it can move 3,500 miles an hour and speed of light, is gone, and now the Air Force picks it up over Texas, and now they got files. Oh, we saw a UFO. Now, they ain't talking to them to say it's the same one, and then the same thing flies down and maybe do a little cattle mutilation. It lands, and, you know, I'm just hypothetically speaking audience here. You know, and it ducks somebody. Now we got the FBI and the Army got their files on it, and then if it crashed, the Army getting it now. Okay. And all of these, it could have been the same UFO that went through this whole process, but we got separate chambers of files and they're not bringing it together. Mm-hmm. So with the Space Force, hopefully now it'll start bridging some of this. And I'm sure with the factions of our government, that's still not happening right now, but we got to do something. And the fact that, you know, all these different military branches has reverse technology from things. And then, like I said, the corporate sector and all, it's just so much going on. But I just think for us as individuals, that it's just time for us to, like my tagline said, it's time to believe, right? And that's what we have to do. And so when I do my shows in Clubhouse, you know, I get a lot of people sharing their experiences. So I've created a place where you can come and share your experiences. And there's no ridicule because I have doctors, lawyers, people talking about their experiences that they normally wouldn't have talked about. They can't talk to their spouses or their coworkers. They can't. It's only been whispered at the water coolers. But now, because we have this one environment, unlike Twitter, where you're just tweeting, ain't YouTube, where, you know, they can watch. But with this Clubhouse, they can talk about it together. And that's what I've created. And it's growing so rapidly. And now it's much more than UFOs to me, because now, you know, we spend so much time being, you know, focusing on what's in the sky. I think it's now for us to pay attention on what's happening to people on the ground. And that's where we are now.
You know, that's really one of the things that stands out about the conversations you have, because they are indeed conversations. And if you're listening now and you have a story to tell, or like you said, Roderick, you are someone who feels maybe you're not in a comfortable space to talk about something like this, it's very important, or to ask questions, right? Then this can be the place for you. Noel, you and I have... I think we didn't even talk about it. We just hang out so much that I'm sure you clocked the thing in Roderick's background. Just there above Roderick's top left is one of my favorite posters ever.
Oh, yeah.
And I think one of yours, too.
Classic X-Files Mulder's office poster. Yeah.
I want to believe. And that leads us to, you know, speculate the spirit of our good pal, Matt Frederick, our co-host, is here as well, because that is his favorite poster, and he's going to be sad that he missed this conversation. So I'd like to be able to give him a little bit of good news. When can people find extraterrestrial evidence on Clubhouse? When can they tune in?
They can tune in weekly. And that's weekly with two E's, not W-E-A-K. and that's at 9 p.m. Central. I do a show every Wednesday, and if they miss some of the shows, they can go to the podcast, you know, Spotify, Apple, and they can hear, because usually I'll transfer. But usually it's going to be a week or two behind. I do that purposely because, you know, it keeps them from missing the show in real time. But then I get a lot of people say, oh, no, I want to come here in real time because I want to be involved in the conversation. So they can go to Clubhouse. They can download the app. Okay. It's no, you know, invite anymore. So Android, iOS, anybody, just go there. Make sure you, you know, search for the club Extraterrestrial Evidence. You'll see 20 some thousand members. You'll see the alien head, and then follow the club. It's important that you do this. And because Clubhouse is growing so fast that algorithm is still trying to catch up. So if you don't hit that alert, the greenhouse, and follow the alerts of the club, and then follow me as the speaker, you won't get notified. You would, but if you could miss them. Okay. Mm-hmm. So definitely follow it. the club joint, because it'll automatically it'll put you into the club, and then follow me as the speaker itself. And then any time that that I am speaking, and mostly 99%, I do speak on the UFO topic. I don't just kind of go into a bird watching room and then you come in and I'm in there talking about bird watching. So I keep it, you know, there. But yeah, I think people should do it. I think it's a place. They'll be definitely shocked on what you hear, but then it may trigger them to get part of the conversation. And that's the and I have guests there all the time. I had Linda Moulton Howie. If you know of her, you know, Billy Carson, Whitley Strieber, just the other night, he pops in and out of our room. And, you know, the list goes on and on. And tomorrow I'll be getting on a plane going to shoot a documentary with one of the largest, one of the big streaming shows. I can't say who the name right now. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so it's growing. I think the atmosphere of where we are, the greatness of what you guys are doing, you know what I'm saying, and teaching people things that they don't want you to know. And this is a great place. And I'm just glad to be here to be part of your show. So,
oh, man, well, we're glad to have you. This is a really cool conversation. Went a lot of places that I wasn't expecting, for sure. Where else can people find you on the internet? Do you tweet? Do you have Instagram or anything else like that?
If they want to see everything in one place, go to RoderickMartin.com. And then yep. That'll have lists to the YouTube channel. I just did my first TikTok. So I'm like, okay, well, we got to go there. And then, you know, the YouTube.
For the kids. It's for the kids.
For the kids. And you know, the funny thing about it, guys, you guys know of E.T., right? The movie E.T.?
Yeah.
Well, I was doing this thing I call E.T. on the Streets is what I'm working on. And just recently I went out there and there was a group of kids. They was probably 20 to 23. And I said something about E.T. and they was like, what's that? I said, you guys ain't never heard of E.T.? And I'm no.
Are you serious?
That's when it dawned on me. Because when I used to do my Clubhouse shows, you know, I'd get some of the scholars. Man, we heard that before. And I'm like, but now my audience is like 25 to 44, and that's like 90%. And they don't remember the stories, E.T. And they never heard of it, you know. And so now I'm going back over some of the old stuff, and they love it, and, you know, bringing them up to speed, you know. And so we do have, a generation that don't know Close Encounters a third time when they hear that.
That's so weird.
Yeah. So
it's kind of like you remember those stories a few years ago when those kids were discovering the Beatles and going to their parents and saying, hey, I found the most amazing band, and I know you used to like music. So,
and they were like, oh, really? You just made that discovery? And so it's yeah. So anyway, you know, again, they can go to RoderickMartin.com. It'll link them to everything that I'm doing. So tell them when the Clubhouse next show, the YouTube channel, the podcast, they can get access to everything from there. Or they can get on the text list, which is textroderick.com. They can get on that. And
awesome.
But you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's that time. I think we are about to really embark on a journey, and I'm just glad to get it. I do hope that I'm able to get into my community more, because like we said early in the show, it's taboo. And there's no one really talking about it there to kind of condition people for what is coming. And that's another place that I would like to try to reach and go. You know, it's a slow move because, again, it is a taboo subject. But I think pretty soon I can make some headway.
And with that, thank you so much for your time today, Roderick. I can't wait to stay in contact as we hear more things developing. I think we can all agree that these stories are accelerating, right? And the press is paying more attention. So as Roderick said, check out his website. Check out also Extraterrestrial Evidence on Clubhouse. And hey, if you happen to be online, Noel, I heard this rumor that people can learn about our show as well. Do you like that tortured segue there?
Tortured, but so appropriate. That's right. We are, in fact, on the internet. That's right. We are, in fact, on the internet in the usual social media places of note, including Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, where we are Conspiracy Stuff, or Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram. You can also find Ben and I on the internet as individual human people. I am on Instagram exclusively at How Now Noel Brown.
You can check out my behind the scenes research and misadventures on Instagram at Ben Bolin, B-O-W-L-I-N, or on Twitter at Ben Bolin, H-S-W. You can also, if you're not super into the sipping the social meds, give us a call directly. We have a phone number, 1-833-STDWYTK. Drop a line. Give us your story. Give yourself a cool nickname. You got 3 minutes. Those are your minutes. Most importantly, let us know if we can use your name and voice on the show. And even more importantly, the most importantly, don't feel like you have to edit yourself. These stories are important. So if you have something that needs more than 3 minutes to explain, you have some links you want to send us, some addendums, some extra information, just write us an email. We'd love to hear from you. We read every email we get. All you have to do is drop us a line where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.